Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Marvel Chronology episode, and today we're continuing with the Thanos reading order. It's time for the death of Captain Marvel. This would be the first ever original graphic novel from Marvel. Came out in 1982. It's by Jim Starlin, meaning he wrote it, he drew it, he inked it. It's colored by Steve Olaf, and letters are by James Novak. So this basically is sort of the end of the story, end of the saga for Captain Marvel. And we know we got the end of the Thanos saga, as it were, at least up till that point, in Marvel 2-in-1 Annual Number 2, which I talked about last time. Thanos does show up in this issue, but it's debatable whether it's actually really Thanos or just some sort of manifestation of Captain Marvel's imagination or subconscious. So let's go ahead and dive into the story. It is called The Death of Captain Marvel, and it starts off with Captain Marvel basically recording some tapes, he calls them, some audio tapes, which is, you know, so interesting, being that he's on Titan and it's this, you know, advanced sort of civilization, and, you know, why the heck would they be recording on tape, audio tapes, rather than digitally? But, you know, just a sign of the times, 1982, definitely the era of the cassette tape. So anyway, he's recording his journeys, talking about his adventures, his victories, his mistakes, as it were. He says, "My hope in recording this mini autobiography is that it may prove of some use to those I leave behind." So we get this sort of quick and dirty history of Captain Marvel. And I really believe that this is part of the graphic novel, just to allow those who have no previous history of Captain Marvel to get some context. Because remember, this is the first original graphic novel Marvel has ever put out. It's the first in this format. And so anybody who sees it on the stands and picks it up, hey, you know, what's this comic that looks a little different? It's larger in size and, you know, better paper and square bound. But if you have no context, then, you know, you might not bother to care about the characters or pick it up. And also, it's just something that they did at the time, you know, even in regular comics at the time, you often would have sort of these recap pages that would bring people up to speed. And it oftentimes was bringing people up to speed on recent events in the comic. And here we're getting Captain Marvel's whole history, which is a little bit different, but still that same basic idea. So he talks about being, you know, a Kree warrior, and how he was sent to Earth on a spy mission, and he was chosen as the chief field agent. Talks about how he was in love with this communications officer on a ship called Una, and how the ship's commander, Yon Rogg, was filled with hatred for him because he lusted after Luna and, you know, was very jealous of the relationship that Captain Marvel and Una had. And then they arrive on Earth, and Captain Marvel starts talking about how he started studying the people. The more they learned about the planet they had targeted, the more he started feeling that this wasn't right. You know, he started thinking about the sort of tyrannical iron fist that the Kree Empire ruled with, and how much they would spoil this, what he calls a lovely world, by enslaving its population. And he confided in Una, and she actually agreed with him, you know, and sort of reinforced that point of view. But unfortunately, Yon Rogg found out, and he took measures to try to assassinate Captain Marvel. And those measures basically led to the death of Una. And that was, you know, and again, this is all from the history of Captain Marvel. You can go back and read from Marvel Superheroes and his own series, and, you know, all this is plays out there. But the death of his beloved Una is what causes him to desert the Kree and basically throw his lot in with the Earthlings. And he always sensed that their collectiveness had the potential for greatness. And he swore that he would become their champion and actually protect them from the Kree should an invasion happen. And so the old Captain Mar-Vell died and the new Captain Marvel was born, and he became Earth's cosmic protector and eventually aided his new homeworld in ridding itself of the threat of the Kree. But of course, the Kree aren't the only race that coveted Earth's natural resources, and time and again he was called upon to defend his adopted world. And a being named Eon obviously granted him the power of cosmic awareness and leveled up his other abilities. And we saw that happen in, what is it, 28 or 29 of the Captain Marvel series that we covered previously on the Thanos Reading Order. And that helped Captain Marvel really level up not only his abilities, you know, all his other strength and agility and stamina and all that, they were all increased. And he did also gain that ability of cosmic awareness. But even beyond that, it changes philosophy, right? Before that, he was very militant by nature in terms of, you know, having been raised in a military environment like the Kree. He was always quick to fight. And after that sort of evolution and leveling up from Eon, he also gained, along with that cosmic awareness, a real sense of peace and of balance. And he was much more meditative, much more willing to look for peaceful outcomes. You know, he realized that fighting wasn't always the answer. So anyway, he talks about how the years passed and it just seemed like it was one villain after another. And he began to tire of it after a while because, again, he'd sort of lost that desire to fight. You know, he realized the sort of the futileness of it all. And he says, in recent years, others of great power have come along and it's allowed me to sort of semi-retire to Titan, a satellite of Saturn. And he talks about what Titan is, how it's a wondrous place, and the outer husk is the sort of the barren ammonia enshrouded desert that is one of the moons of Saturn. But inside it lies a very futuristic paradise, and the world is justly ruled by the demigod named Mentor and his son Eros, who he met years ago when he was opposing their Mentor's other son, the evil Thanos. And Thanos himself had proved to be the most dangerous foe that the Captain Marvel had ever faced. And Captain Marvel goes on to say, in fact, it's Thanos that is the reason I have to go on a voyage. During our last conflict, Thanos was killed when he was turned into stone. And, you know, he had sought to destroy our whole solar system in order to make up with his beloved death. And as he's recording this, Eros or Star Fox sticks his head in and says, "Mar-Vell, we're almost there." Like, "Wait, say, what are you up to back here?" And Marvel says, "I'm just doing a little recording, preparing an audio file, my so-called life and adventures for the Avengers and other of Earth heroes." And Star Fox says, "What, are you a little young to be writing your memoirs?" He says, "Perhaps, but you never know." And there's a picture of Star Fox after Captain Marvel says that. It's a very contemplative look on his face. So he goes on to say that when he was with the Avengers, after Thanos was defeated, they towed Thanos' ship out past Pluto and abandoned it there. And they figured that if they left it that far out, it would be unlikely that Thanos' ship would fall into the wrong hands. And Thanos had run his whole operation from that ship, that sanctuary, as it was called. And it was from there that he created the weapon that was meant to destroy their sun. I mean, really, the weapon was meant to destroy all stars. But after that plan was sort of thwarted in Avengers Annual 7, which we covered a couple episodes ago, he thought, well, maybe it'll be enough for death if I just destroy the sun. And so they are there to basically take Thanos's body, his petrified body, back to Titan. And he says, yeah, it took the combined power of the Avengers, the Thing, Adam Warlock, and Spider-Man to thwart Thanos. And it was Adam Warlock who finally struck him down. And Adam Warlock basically could reach from beyond his own grave and saved our solar system. And, you know, they're walking through the the remains of that battle, and we see guns and weapons and such strewn about, and Captain Marvel's talking about how at the last moment the Golden Warrior saved us so that the light of life would continue to shine in the universe. But the price Adam Warlock paid was his own life, and it cost Mentor his son. And we see them come upon the statue of Thanos, you know, Thanos's body itself, which has been turned into this stone statue. And we're told that Thanos was born a demigod, and his power was almost without end. He gave his heart to death, and he died attempting to satisfy that love of his, you know, how he was trying to sacrifice the whole solar system to death to make up for him losing the power of the cosmic cube. And so they notice that while they're standing there, that Thanos he's not on the ground anymore. He's on an altar. And they find that to be rather strange, right? Like previously when they left him, they just left him where he stood, which was on the ground. And Mentor is saying that, you know, Thanos was a villain, and his crimes may have hurt the honor of Mentor's family, but he was a Titan just the same, and Mentor doesn't feel right about letting his son just spend eternity entombed in this ship that's orbiting out behind Pluto. So their plan is to return the body to the crypt on Titan. But as I said, they noticed that there's a sort of a platform that Thanos's body is placed atop of. And so Captain Marvel sends out his power cosmic, and what he realizes is there's a bunch of other beings on board, and they immediately start to attack. But, you know, these are just, I guess you'd say, garden variety riffraff. Like a lot of the thugs or thralls, as Starlin was very fond of calling them, that always worked for Thanos. So sort of your garden variety criminals of the cosmos. And while they might be pretty threatening to your average Joe, Mentor, Star Fox, and Captain Marvel are certainly more than capable of defending themselves. So even though there's only three of them, they make relatively short work of these worshippers of Thanos who are there on the ship. And so once they've managed to dispatch all of them, Star Fox takes one of the smaller ones who's still conscious and says, okay, look, what's this ambush all about, right? Like, why did you attack us? Who are you? And he says, we're the children of Thanos. He leads us on a quest for glory, and we fight and die by his side. His dreams are our dreams. And Star Fox says, well, his dreams are as dead as him. And the little guy says, no, he's just resting. He promised us a new life. And he would not let down those who honor his name, because he's our master and he's omnipotent. And one day he's going to return, and that day will be filled with blood and glory. And so we await his resurrection and blah, 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 right? So not a new story, you know, kind of similar to what you'd hear from some sort of fanatic believer. And the three, Captain Marvel, Mentor, and Eros are surprised, like, oh my god, they're worshiping Thanos as if he's a god and he's destined to return. And Mentor just loses it. He's like, you fool, how can you be so blind? He was evil, he was a lunatic, and he would have used you and sacrificed you and thrown you away without a second thought. He's promising you this new life. You're an idiot. You're repaying his treachery with blind worship, and you're waiting for him to return. So wait no more, leave, get out of here. I'm taking his body home, and I'm going to destroy the Ark, and you all should leave now before we destroy this place, and go and begin that new life Thanos promised you, you know, whatever it might be. So as they all take their leave, we see Captain Marvel sort of double over coughing, and the coughing fit even drives him to his knees. And Mentor and Eros are like, I didn't see him even get hit in the battle. Like, what's going on? And Captain Marvel sort of recovered and he's standing up and Mentor's asking, hey, what happened? Are you okay? And Captain Marvel says, yeah, I'm just a little winded. Let's get Thanos back to Titan. And Mentor's like, yeah, okay. But, you know, when we get back there, I think I want to put you through a Medi scan with the supercomputer Isaac, just to make sure there's nothing wrong. Any objections? Marvel says, no, but I'm afraid Isaac's just going to confirm what I already suspect. And they're surprised by that. Like, well, what do you mean? He said, well, you forget my power. My body has no secrets that I can't unravel. The cosmic awareness can be turned inward just as much as it can be turned outward. Star Fox says, well, is there something wrong? Can we help? And Captain Marvel says, maybe, but I doubt it. So they return to Titan, and Isaac, the supercomputer, does run a series of tests on Captain Marvel. And as Mentor's reading the results, he tells Captain Marvel, yep, Isaac confirms the findings of your cosmic senses, I'm sorry. And Captain Marvel says, yeah, I was pretty sure my senses were right. I first detected it a couple of weeks ago. And in that time, I've studied a mountain of medical volumes looking for a cure, and I failed. So I've never asked for your help before because I've been unable to voice my fear that this is actually happening. And Mentor says, yeah, well, I can understand that. It's a terrible disease. You know, on Titan, we call it the inner decay. The Kree call it the blackened. Earthmen call it cancer, but no matter what you call it, Isaac gives a very negative prognosis. And the fact of the matter is we don't really have that much experience with this on Titan. Our environment is pretty unpolluted, so it doesn't happen that often. So Captain Marvel says, well, how much time do you think, does Isaac think that I have? He says, well, about 3 months. But I can't understand how this could happen to you. You know, you're so powerful and healthy. And Captain Marvel says, well, it was about 7 years ago. I was back on Earth and there was a criminal, a thief called Nitro, and he stole this canister of nerve gas. And during our battle, it broke open and it was threatening thousands of lives in the area. So I basically had no choice but to reseal the tank with my bare hands. And I never realized it, but I think that nerve gas acted as a carcinogen, and in that moment, my body started to die. But the photonic power of my negabands fought the cancer off for a long time, but I think I would have died years ago had that not been the case. But apparently the cancer is back. You know, the remission period's over and the disease is resuming its march, as it were. And a Mentor says, well, we of Titan are going to do anything we can to help you. So we'll get to work on asking for help and asking for a cure and seeing what other, what other species have found. Isaac can beam out and ask for all available data on your condition to all the planetary governments. And there's got to be one of them that's seen this type of cancer before and has a cure for it. Like, what about your people, the Kree? They've got to have some, you know, knowledge of this disease. And Captain Marvel says, no, war has always been the Kree's occupation. They've never had the time or resources to devote to finding a cure for the blackened. They're kind of like Earth in that way. And besides, they're not gonna help out a traitor to their planet. And fighting a terminal disease is kind of out of my league. I'm a warrior, not a doctor. So I'll hope and pray that you or Isaac or somebody out there has a cure for me, but I'm not expecting any miracles. I mean, it would be nice, but I figure my time's come. I never expected to end like this, but you know, I'm learning to live with it. And then Mentor asks if Alesius knows, and Captain Marvel, the look of despair in his face, says, no, not yet. And I just remember how I felt when Una died, and I was trying to spare her that emptiness. You know, this is not the legacy that I want to leave her. Something I hope would kind of go away. I'd wake up, I'd find it was all a bad dream. But I suppose miracles and miracle cures are the food of fools. So if you'll excuse me, Mentor, there are things I must go take care of.
And he walks out and mentor says, man, I wish I'd learned to keep my ever questioning mouth shut. I can't think of a happier couple than those two. And now they're not going to have a chance to be together. And Alicia, she really seemed to fill a gap in Marvel's soul that Una's death had created. And, you know, he's been at such peace, and they're so in love, and this cruel fate would end their love that way is terrible. And so as he's looking out the window, he sees Captain Marvel go to his girlfriend, Alicia, and speak to her. And it's a powerful page from Jim Starlin. There's no dialogue on it. We just see Captain Marvel in the gardens go and sit down on a bench next to Alicia as mentor. Every other panel is mentor turning, walking away, not wanting to see firsthand the exchanges. Captain Marvel tells her his news, and she begins to cry, and he comforts her. So on the next page, Captain Marvel has resumed his auto bio tape number 2. Remember, he's recording these on cassettes for some reason. And he's talking about how he had deserted the Kree Empire, and less than a year later, he'd been tricked to returning, and he stood before the Empire's most powerful monarch, the Supreme Intelligence, and the Supreme Intelligence banished him to the Negative Zone, and he seemed he was doomed to stay there forever when, as fate would have it, Rick Jones came across the Kree Negabands in a secret cavern on Earth, and they discovered that by banging the bands together, they could switch places. And eventually, during this period, Captain Marvel got his revenge on Yon Rogg and made him pay for Una's murder. And he then, his relationship with Rick, they became very close friends during this time, you know, switching places and sort of sharing constant mental contact. And this was the time that Captain Marvel made friends among Earth's heroes, the Avengers, and took care of all sorts of threats and villains, both on Earth and cosmic. And we get a great page from Starlin. It's a big montage, and we see so many of the people that Captain Marvel fought against. Sometimes heroes, some mostly villains. Super Adaptoid, Analyst, Iron Man, who else is on here? Namor, Drax the Destroyer, the Controller, see the Watcher there, the Thing, Quasimodo, Hulk, the aforementioned Nitro, Ronan the Accuser. So he says some later became friends, but I'm afraid I'm going to leave behind way more enemies than any man should have. But one enemy stood out above all, and that being the Mad Warlord of Titan, Thanos. And he talks about how Thanos worshipped death, and Thanos' plans with the Cosmic Cube that they thwarted, and how with the help of Adam Warlock, they eventually stopped him for good. And, you know, we see the replay of that battle where Captain Marvel's talking about how it took the combined might of the Avengers and Spider-Man and Thing and himself and Adam Warlock to finally take Thanos out for good. And shortly after that, Captain Marvel was able to escape from the Negative Zone. So he and Rick Jones were able to sort of part their ways as Rick went to pursue his music career, and they were no longer tied together, having to bang the bands together to switch places. And it's been a few years since he's seen Rick. Captain Marvel wanted to give him his space after basically sharing his life for so long. And now he realizes that he must locate and talk to him as soon as possible, because Captain Marvel's worried that maybe Rick Jones has cancer as well, since their bond was so close. So over the next couple of pages, we see Captain Marvel go to Earth and visit with Rick. And when he tells Rick about the cancer, you know, Rick is stricken. You know, he's very shocked and says, well, okay, you're getting some kind of treatment, right? And he said, well, yeah, Mentor's giving me radiation treatments, but it's not working that well, because the trouble is that I'm a Kree. and my biological system is different from people from Titan or people from Earth, and Isaac's only giving me a 0.09% chance to recover without the help of Kree medical scientists. And Rick's like, then you got to go to the Kree. Like, you got to make them help you. And he says, Captain Marvel says, the Kree Empire is not about to help somebody they consider a traitor. I'm afraid it doesn't look good for me. And Rick, he's mad. He's like, what, you're just going to give up and die? Like, don't give me this no hope crap. I've seen you in action. You know, we've been in tight situations before and we always came out ahead. Your photonic powers, your cosmic awareness, you can beat anything. Like, you're a Kree warrior, you're trained to fight. You can't just lay down and give up. And Captain Marvel's like, yeah, those type of powers, that kind of fighting is sort of useless in this situation. I can't punch or kick or fly. It's cancer. It doesn't work that way. It's my body itself that's betrayed me. And there's nothing my powers can do. I'm trying to accept this fate. And Jones is not having any of it. He says, accept. Well, maybe you're prepared to accept it, but I'm not. You know, you were a part of my life for so long, and I'm not going to sit around and watch you die. I'm not going to let you die. Maybe you're willing to give up on living, but I'm not. There's got to be a way to beat this, and I'm going to find it. And he goes running off. And so it's not really the sort of reunion Captain Marvel would have hoped for, but, you know, we all deal with grief in a different way. And Marvel's left there standing on the rooftop alone saying, I'm sorry, Rick, I can't help it. So he journeys back to Titan and tries to spend time with Alesius again, you know, as much as he can, take advantage of the time he has left. And they're talking about Rick and how Captain Marvel can't really understand his reaction. And Alesius says, well, he's an orphan, right? And that's a light bulb moment for Captain Marvel. He says, of course, that's, you know, that's what it is. People have been leaving him behind his whole life, right? Like his parents, and then he was partnered with the Hulk and that didn't work out. And then Captain America, and, you know, no team that he's ever on really seems to work out in the long run. Now I'm leaving him behind too. So yeah, I guess I didn't think about that. I guess it's really harder on those we leave behind rather than the person that's passing away. And he says, I've been thinking a lot lately about the people I met in my lifetime. I've made quite a few friends along the way. And I count among them Adam Warlock. I was with him when he died, and his life, you know, was so hard and sad. It was right from the start filled with pain and confusion. But when death came, he welcomed it as a friend. And I can't do that. Like, I'm not a big enough person to do that. I've enjoyed this life. It's had its bad moments, but it's had far more good moments, and I'm gonna miss it. So meanwhile, back on Earth, Rick Jones has called in some favors, as it were. He's at Avengers Mansion, and he's called together Yellow Jacket, Black Panther, Vision, Wonder Man, Beast, Iron Man, and Thor. And he says, you all have scientific or special medical knowledge, and if there's anybody who can save Captain Marvel's life, it's you. Like, with your powers and brains, you should be able to come up with a cure for cancer in no time. And Black Panther's like, hold on a minute, Rick. I don't think you understand the complexities of cancer research. Armin says, yeah, there's hundreds of research scientists that have been working on this for decades, and there's a reason for that. And B says, yeah, it's true. We're good, but cancer research is something none of us have any experience with. And Wonder Man says, yeah, I think what Beast is trying to say is don't expect miracles. Like, you know, we'll do the best we can. And Rick, you know, he doesn't want to hear it. He says, oh, I get it. In other words, you'd like to help, but you don't want to take it on because it doesn't look good if you take it on and you can't solve it, right? Bad for your reputation. And he storms off, and Beast calls after him, but Rick just ignores him. And what Rick doesn't know is that they've all agreed already to go to Titan and try to find a cure for Captain Marvel's cancer. But the thing that's bothering each of them is, you know, this is such a problem and they have all this ability. Why is it taken somebody they know, you know, a good friend and a comrade, why is it taken somebody they know getting sick in order for them to work on it? Like, they could have tried this before. They could have tried to find a cure or worked on this problem before. And that's the question they have to ask themselves. And the answer each one comes up with isn't very satisfactory, is what we're told. So days turn into weeks, and the word spreads throughout the galaxy that Captain Marvel's dying, and the darkness is once again going to claim the light, and the universe is going to be a little emptier, and the news is received with mixed feelings. So we see the Skrull Empire, the Skrull Emperor himself reacting to the news. We see people of Earth shocked. We see on the Kree homeworld, the Supreme Intelligence is pleased by the news, whereas most others are feeling the loss. So now that all this time has gone by, back on Titan, we see Captain Marvel is now in a different set of clothes. We're told it's a medical tunic that's helping to keep him on life support. The meta system built into the tunic has reduced the degeneration process by 20% or so. So Captain Marvel's not wasting away as quickly as he would be otherwise. And Marvel says, yeah, it's an excuse to get out of the old red and blue leotard or phase. I've lost so much weight, I'd look silly in it. I think I'll wander down to the comm center. He's got more tapes to record. So as he heads out, he runs into Star Fox. And he says, you know, I'm glad I ran into you. I've been meaning to ask you something. And he says, look, I've known for a long time about your feelings for Alesius. And Star Fox said, hey, Marvel, I would never. It's like, no, I know you. You would never come between her and I, but I'm going to be gone pretty soon. I'm going to be dead. And she's going to need somebody that she can confide in and trust. She's going to need a friend. And you know, I can't think of anybody better suited for that than you. Will you look after her for me? And Star Fox, yeah, says, yeah, I will. And Captain Marvel walks off. And as he does, we see Star Fox turn away with tears in his eyes. He's losing a good friend here. So with Alesius on his mind, Captain Marvel starts recording some more autobio tapes, and he's talking about Alesius being the enemy that he learned to love, talks about her being part of a mad doomsday legacy left behind by Thanos. Her job was to kill Drax and himself, but they were able to convince her that she should join forces instead. And after a matter of time, their friendship grew into love, and they both settled down on Titan, and they made plans, and they talked of having children. And now all of a sudden that's all for naught, you know, yesterday's dreams, as it were, because death is knocking at his door. And he's kind of lamenting the loss of that good life he would have had with Alesius. And he begins to say, I wish, and then all of a sudden there's searing pain, and he's doubled over. And once it's over, he lashes out and destroys a computer terminal. And you can tell he's having a hard time accepting this as much as he's trying to. He says, alien invaders, supervillains, monsters, mutants, they all tried, but none could kill me. I fought them all and I won. I survived. Who would have thought in the end it would be my own body that would turn on me? And then he says, but it's futile. Like, why is he carrying on? You know, everybody has to die. He's no different. He's not immortal. It's not like he's been singled out. He just didn't think it would end this way, right? He always felt that those special things that made him who he was would live forever. And it's hard to accept he's going to be gone and the world's going to continue on without him. So as he strodes off down the hallway, we see Mentor there, and he's kind of overheard all this. And he says that he's thinking he needs to redouble his efforts. He says, everybody on Thanos, everybody in the universe, or everybody on Titan, rather, everybody in the universe, they all owe Marvel their lives over, you know, a dozen times. And they just need to repay him just once by solving it. So he heads to the lab and asks how it's going. And we see there's a bunch of different characters there. Reed Richards, Doctor Strange, Thor, the Beast. And Doctor Strange says, yeah, every time we try something, it's always blocked by the same obstacle, Marvel's negabands. It's that same problem that you found. The wristlets that he wears, they charge his body with the photonic energy, and it's kept his cancer in check all these years. But the problem is that during that time, the disease mutated and gained immunity to the photonic power that was holding the cancer at bay, and the cancer has now spread, but Captain Marvel's body has become dependent on the negabands because of the disease attacking. And so now if they remove the negabands, Captain Marvel will die. But any cure that they find, that they try, is blocked by the negabands. So they're kind of in a catch-22. If they take the negabands off, he dies, but they can't come up. They're trying to find a cure that will circumvent the negabands. But no matter what they try, radiation, sorcerer spells, no matter what, it's blocked. And, you know, Beast says it. Yeah, it's so frustrating. In other words, the only thing that's keeping Marvel alive is also the thing that's keeping us from curing him. And as they're having this conversation, Eros comes in and calls out, "Father, it's Mar-Vell. He's collapsed. We've taken him to the East Wing chamber, and our time runs short." And so they say, "Okay, let's keep working. We have to make every moment count." Meanwhile, in Mar-Vell's rooms, we see Eliseus is sitting with him, and the word goes out that the time has arrived. Very short time left, and then the very next day, ships start to arrive from Earth and from other cultures, other advanced and exotic spaceships, even from outside the solar system, and all the crafts are immediately identified and cleared for landing except for one. But finally, even that ship is granted clearance once certain guarantees of proper conduct are made, and as we turn the page, we see, you know, bevy of Earth's heroes here, from Valkyrie to Spider-Man, Human Torch, the X-Men, even Ghost Rider is there, Namor, Hulk, Tigra, Hercules, Iron Man, all the Avengers, Captain America, Hellcat, Black Widow, they've all come to pay their last respects. We even see some of the Inhumans, as well as Power Man and Iron Fist, Gargoyle. So Captain America asks Eros, "Hey, how's he holding up? Is there any chance?" And Eros says, "No. As far along as he is, it's, you know, no operation, no cure can even work at this late hour. So it's just a matter of time." But I think he'll be glad to see all you guys, because I think he misses Earth. And Captain America says, "Well, not half as much as Earth is going to miss him, right? I mean, they're really losing a great hero." So the scene then shifts and to Captain Marvel's bedchamber, and we see he's got the dark circles under his eyes. He's looking very old, and him and Eliseus are talking about how much they love each other, and how they've never cared about anyone as much as they've cared about each other. And Star Fox comes in and says, "You know, there's some folks here from Earth that would like to see you. Are you up for visitors?" And that brings a smile to Captain Marvel's face. He says, "From Earth, Rick?" And meanwhile, we see the Earth scientist and mentor putting in their last sort of attempts at a cure into Isaac, and Isaac keeps coming back with the same answer: treatment nullified by photonic interference, prognosis negative. And they're just so angry. They say, "Well, maybe a combination of treatments. Let's, you know, they're going to work to the last moment, basically, to see if they can find a cure." And meanwhile, we see Spidey and Human Torch and Thing visiting with Captain Marvel and reminiscing about old times when Spidey sort of gets real quiet and has to excuse himself. And the Thing is kind of beside him, like, "Spidey, what the heck, dude? Like, we're visiting with our buddy and you're acting like what's wrong with you?" And Marvel, ever the hero, even at this time, says, "You know, death touches us all in different ways. Some barely feel its passing, but others it strikes right in the face. So, you know, you gotta let him go." And as he walks out, Beast says, "Well, Spidey, you okay?" He's like, "Yeah, it's just a bit too much, right? Like, I can't believe this is this is happening. I mean, Marvel's like one of us. He's a full-blown superhero. We die from bullets and bombs, but cancer, it doesn't seem right. And B says, well, in case you hadn't noticed, underneath most of these fancy costumes, we're just mortal men and women. And none of us have a say in how our life's going to end. And Spidey says, yeah, I guess not. And the B says, but yeah, don't feel like you're alone in your feelings. We're all having a hard time accepting this, especially him. And we see that Rick Jones has indeed showed up despite his feelings of anger before that Captain Marvel was just giving up. And so, you know, he looks at all these heroes gathered and he says, do I grab a number or something? And B says, no, you walk right in. He's been waiting for you. And when Captain Marvel sees him, you know, he gets a big smile on his face saying, Rick, you came. And Rick says, yeah, we're partners, right? That's where I belong. But, you know, it wasn't easy. It's you ever try hitchhiking from Earth to Titan? But yeah, luckily I was able to get a lift. And Rick starts to break down and cry. And he says, but what I'm really trying to say is I'm sorry. You know, I've been a fool. And Captain Marvel says, no, I understand. I understand. But you're here now. That's what matters. And the other heroes all leave the room and give those two a chance to be alone for a while. And then we see the next group of visitors to arrive, or next pair, is Moondragon and Drax the Destroyer. And they talk about how they've been traveling the universe together, getting to know each other. You know, Drax, his essence, his soul, if you will, is actually from Arthur Douglas, who's Heather Douglas's father. So technically Drax and Moondragon are father and daughter. So they don't know each other that well, but they are relearning, right, about each other. And so Marvel is happy to hear that. And Drax is giving some advice to Marvel, saying, you know, I've been where you are, right? Been where you're headed. And there's a lot of garbage that we're handed throughout our lives about what death is like, but no description I've ever heard comes close. So it's indescribable, and it's not really that bad. And Captain Marvel's like, well, okay, you know, thanks, Drax, but you'll forgive me if I don't rush off and try to find out if you're giving to me straight. And Drax, I love this answer. Of course, take your time. But in the meantime, I have someone who wants to meet with you. And who comes in next is a Skrull. And Drax says, Captain Marvel, I'd like to present to you General Zadro. And Rick immediately picks up a vase off the table and says, it's a Skrull. And, you know, again, these are, at this time, Skrull are really considered a scourge on the universe. The Kree and the Skrull are, you know, mortal enemies. And even though Captain Marvel has left his Kree roots behind, they still consider each other mortal enemies. And Drax is trying to calm everybody down, saying, no, the general's here on an official matter of state. And he assured us that it's a peaceful mission. And the general says, yes, Captain Marvel, I'm here to greet you in the name of the Imperial Skrull Empire. And I'm not here because you're our enemy, but because you've always been our greatest enemy. No being in the entire galaxy has ever faced our armies as bravely as you. And you're the greatest warrior who ever walked the stars. And, you know, we Skrulls are a martial race, and we've long respected your skills. So even though you're our foe, I'm here to present you with the Order of the Imperial Council, which is basically the Skrull Medal of Valor. And he says, I salute you, Captain. May your passing be swift and your afterlife reward great. And he walks out. And Rick Jones is beside himself. He's like, man, the Skrulls, your worst enemy, give you a medal. But your own people, do they honor you? No, nothing. No matter how many times you pulled their fat out of the fire. And Marvel reminds him, yeah, but in the end, he turned his back on the Kree. And he suspects that he's on the Supreme Intelligence blacklist, and they don't give medals to traitors. And Rick laments how it all seems so unfair. And Marvel says, well, I'm not going to comment on that, but what I will say is I may have been ignored by an ungrateful homeworld, but I've got a good woman who I love by my side and many, many friends who I value. So the Kree can keep their medals and honors. Who needs them? Meanwhile, as night falls upon Titan, the scientists are still working, trying to find a cure. We see Beast and Reed Richards and Mentor still working alongside Isaac when Star Fox comes in and says, you know, I have bad news. Marvel's fallen into a coma. And that's when they finally have to admit defeat. Mentor says, yeah, we're too late. We have failed you, Captain Marvel. So at midnight, we see Captain Marvel there in his bed, you know, unconscious. All the heroes around sort of on a death watch, if you will. And Mentor says, you know, he was the best of us, and I would have given anything to save him. And he kind of echoes Rick's thoughts, and he says, it's all so unfair. And at those words, Captain Marvel's eyes sort of come open a little bit, and he hears that those two words echoing in his mind, so unfair, so unfair, so unfair. And we see his sort of grizzled, you know, pained and gaunt visage there. His face looks aged prematurely as it gradually morphs over a series of panels. Great, great artwork here by Starlin as Marvel's face morphs into the face of Thanos, that petrified statue of Thanos. And the scene then shifts to the sub-basement, where in the midst of death, we have life, and we see a little spark in Thanos' eyes, and he transforms back into flesh and blood from that stone statue that he was, and he climbs down from the pedestal and up the stairs, eventually making his way to Thanos' bedchamber, and the doors are locked, but that's not going to stop him. Nothing's going to stop him. His goal lies within his reach. So he blasts the doors apart and enters the room, and it's Marvel there alone in his room. So again, this is something that's happening in Marvel's subconscious or his imagination or something. It's not Thanos really come back to life. When Marvel sees him, he yells out, "Thanos, you're supposed to be dead." And Thanos says, "Well, so am I. And it would appear you're going to join me soon. And it pains me to see you in such a terrible state, frail and ill. You know, I always had great respect for you. You were always my greatest foe. And for death to come at you gnawing like a rat, that's not how it should be. For you, death should be a glorious event. So rise, Captain Marvel." And all of a sudden, Marvel's up out of bed and he's whole again. He has his costume on. And he says, "The greatest minds of the universe have labored for months trying to save me. They failed, and you come along and wave your hand and I'm well again? How?" He says, "Well, because I'm Thanos. You know, I'm death and the lover of death. And I've returned from the darkness for one last battle with you." And the room then changes, and they're in this strange sort of quasi-twilight environment. And Captain Marvel's like, where are you taking me? And Thanos says, "Behold the heart of the universe as it pumps the life's blood of your existence. It is all you love, and it's about to be denied you, for I've come to destroy it." And Captain Marvel says, "Why?" "Well, because I'm Thanos, and because you are Captain Marvel, it's your job to stop me." And Marvel says, "Then I will stop you, madman." And they fight. The fight begins, and Marvel, as he tries to stop Thanos, is not only fighting Thanos, but all these old foes that have died are returning from the grave to try to stop Marvel as well. But he defeats all of them. And is only left to try to defeat Thanos. And as he eventually punches Thanos and Thanos flies apart, he says, "What you need to be prepared is to find that your victories are the stuff of dreams. They're illusions." So again, you know, reinforcing that fact that none of this is real. This is Captain Marvel's mind or subconscious sort of accepting his last moments here. And, another Thanos shows up, like immediately appears after he shattered the first one. And Captain Marvel says, "Thanos, he shattered like a statue." And then the other Thanos shows up and says, "Yes, because that's all that's left of me on this plane. Like all men, I'm finite and I accept it. But you're so arrogant that you're not. You're fighting against death is futile. It's the way of man. It's the only way we know to play the game. But she comes for you no matter what. Are you ready for her?" And we see death appear. And Captain Marvel says, "Well, I guess I'm as ready as I'll ever be." And Thanos tells him, she's the bridge to eternity. Her caress is peace. You don't need to fear her. She's just the inevitable that waits for us all. As Captain Marvel looks at her, and again, she has the visage of a beautiful woman. He says, it's not that I fear her. It's just that I no longer need the illusion. And he waves his hand in front of her face, and she goes from being that beautiful woman that Thanos sees her as to being that skeletal embodiment of death that we're more used to seeing. And Thanos says, so it ends. And we see that heart of the universe again, which looks like a human heart beating and then slowly stop. And Marvel says, that's all there is to it, huh? A kiss from beyond the veil and I'm no more. And Thanos says, no, there's more. It awaits us. Take her hand. She'll lead us on our journey and she'll show us this is not the end, but only the beginning. And they walk off into the light. Little cliche there, right? Head into the light. Meanwhile, back in the bedchambers, we see the equipment that monitors Mar-Vell's heartbeat is showing a flat line, and Mentor leans over and turns it off. And we see many of the heroes there with tears in their eyes looking down as Mentor covers Captain Marvel's body with a sheet and says he's gone. And then on the back cover, we see the heroes and Rick Jones and Alicia's Mentor, all of them standing at what we assume is Captain Marvel's grave as the stars shine above. And there's a big tombstone there. So that's how he goes out. That's how Captain Marvel goes out. It's so interesting to me because even though Jim Starlin went on to the Captain Marvel book and created something instantly classic and brought that book back from cancellation, he then left the book and the numbers of, you know, eventually dwindled and it got canceled. And Starlin moved on to Warlock, because really the story that Starlin always wanted to tell was the story of Thanos. It wasn't the story of Captain Marvel or Mar-Vell. But he was an interesting character, you know, and Starlin certainly put his mark on him. Like I said, he leveled him up, brought that that piece to him and you know, made him a more interesting character, more complicated character rather than just being a generic sort of Buck Rogers clone, for a lack of a better term. But he never was really that popular in terms of the fans, in terms of the sales. You know, he couldn't sustain his own book when Starlin left. And he didn't show up that often, you know. But then to see this story and how beloved he was, I just find that to be so interesting. Because the other part of this, and I talk about this all the time, he hasn't really shown up again. I mean, we're talking almost 40 years since this graphic novel, and he hasn't returned when everybody has returned. Even, I mean, you used to always say it was three people, right? It was Gwen Stacy, Uncle Ben, and Captain Marvel. It seemed like the only three that Marvel Comics wouldn't bring back. And now we've got Spider-Gwen. And granted, she's not the exact same Gwen Stacy, but close enough. And I wish she didn't exist, got to be honest with you. I wish those three were all still sacred. So we have Uncle Ben and we have Captain Marvel. And those are the only two that haven't ever come back. And that's not to say that we've never seen stories with them, because we have alternate universes and that sort of thing. In DC, it's called the multiverse. And Marvel, it's just, you know, different universe, ultimate universe, that sort of thing. And Mar-Vell has shown up from time to time when people have been dead. They've gone to hell or to heaven or to some sort of afterlife. And Mar-Vell has been there, but he's never really been resurrected. It hasn't been like others that have died, like Tony Stark has died and Captain America has died. And, you know, Wolverine has died and Jean Grey and Cyclops and, you know, all those people have come back, Professor X. They haven't done that with Captain Marvel. Now, whether that's because they don't think he's popular enough or there's some other reason, but whatever reason, I do hope they leave him deceased, because even though it was cancer, there was such a dignity about the way that he died, even though it wasn't heroic. It was impactful. I mean, this was a big deal when it came out, even though he was more, I mean, in terms of popularity and notoriety, he was more of a B-list character, you know, power level. He was A all the way. He was one of the very powerful character in the Marvel universe, but again, he wasn't used a lot. He really was from the time Starlin worked on him. You know, he's most closely associated with Jim Starlin. When you talk about what creators you would associate with Captain Marvel. So I'm glad they've never brought him back. I hope they never bring him back, because it would so diminish this work, this graphic novel, which is just instantly classic and incredible. And it, you know, has that powerful message that no matter how powerful, what superpowers you have, you know, we're all destined to meet our maker at some point. You know, we're all destined to pass on. And yeah, I mean, it's just masterfully done. And like I said, it's definitely a classic. So I'm so happy Marvel has never brought him back. And I hope they never do, because it would so much diminish what's going on and what happens in this graphic novel. But again, that the other part of it to me that's so interesting is just how beloved he is by all the other heroes, when he really wasn't around for that long in terms of, you know, his series and how often he showed up and interacted. I mean, when he did, like, you know, he did save the universe multiple times. He thwarted Thanos multiple times. So there's a lot to be said for that. But yeah, just I find that to be really, really interesting. You know, you wouldn't think that the death of somebody who, you know, notoriety wise or popularity wise is just a B-list character. But I kind of feel like the way they had him die, you know, this story that Jim Starlin wrote is what sort of elevated him in everybody's mind, and the way he so expertly kind of showed and displayed how the other heroes all felt about Captain Marvel. You know, like when Starlin leveled him up and brought that level of peace to him and wisdom. It was at that point that everybody looked at Captain Marvel as something to aspire to, right? Like he had that inner peace within him and that wisdom, just one of those kind of people that you always wanted to be around, and he inspired people and he was something that you looked up to. And so of course, when something like that is taken, it leaves a big hole. It's those types of people are rare. No matter how long they've been in your life or how long you've known them. So you can see why it'd be so impactful. And then as far as the art goes, this is Starlin at the height of his powers. You know, great line work, great layouts, great action, very kinetic. You know, a lot of good character moments in here. And there's a lot of tears. There's a lot of sadness. There's a lot of kind of angst and frustration, especially on the faces of a lot of the more scientific or medical leaning characters, as they're searching for a cure and they keep coming up against those same sort of obstacles. And even the few panels where Marvel lashes out in anger or is sort of racked with pain, the color work by Olaf is done very well. He often goes diachromatic, where he's just using a couple of colors to show us how impactful, you know, it is, how this is sort of this pain or this anger is overriding everything else that the character is experiencing at that time. And there's a couple of pages where it's just, I mean, the art is just transcendent. Like the sequence I described where Marvel goes down to tell Alesius for the first time about his cancer, and mentors looking on and sort of turns away and disappears into the shadows because he can't bear to watch Captain Marvel tell his beloved that he's dying. And the fact that page is done without any words, you know, it's just art, just sequential art, shows the masterfulness of Starlin as a visual storyteller. So if you have never read this, like, you cannot call yourself a Marvel Comics fan and not have read this. I'm sorry, you just can't. It's one of the most classic, most important, most impactful stories that, Marvel's ever done. And again, it started a whole new format, you know, the graphic novel. So it's very important. It's very influential. And if you are a Marvel Comics fan and you haven't read this, then you really need to. And I wish that if you haven't read it, that you hadn't listened to this podcast yet. I want you to read it first and then go and listen. And I'll probably notate that in my social media when I put this out there, like, hey, listen to this because it breaks it down and it's a good recap and a good reminder of how great a story this is if you've read it. And I think you'll enjoy what I have to say about it. But if you've never read it, go and read it first and then come and listen to this podcast. So anyway, I think that's going to do it for this episode of the Marvel Chronology Thanos Reading Order. Like I said, if you've never read this, I give it my highest possible recommendation. Go and check it out. The artwork is amazing. The story, it's impactful. And I think you'll get a lot out of it. So I want to thank everybody for listening as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.